I used to love my morning coffee until it stopped loving me back. The bloating, the discomfort, it just wasn't worth it anymore. Then I found Everyday Dose, coffee with benefits. It's real coffee blended with mushrooms, collagen, and nootropics. Now I get my morning ritual without the crash or the discomfort. The Black Friday sale is on. Get 61% off your first coffee plus starter kit, a free A2 probiotic creamer, and over $100 in free gifts. Plus, you could win $100 cash or even get your entire order refunded. Head to everydaydose.com/podcast or use code podcast at checkout.
Welcome to SI's Planet Football Podcast, where each week we discuss the latest in the world of soccer. I am SI.com soccer editor Avi Creditor, joined today by SI's senior writer Grant Wall, SI.com's Ben Littleton, and later on we'll be joined by SI.com's Brian Strauss. We are coming to you a day after Juventus stunned Real Madrid in the Spanish capital to advance the Champions League final against Barcelona. June 6th in Berlin, it'll be Barcelona and Juventus. Grant, Ben, quite the showing by Juventus. Grant, let's start with you. Were you surprised that they were able to get it done in Spain? And what do you think about their run to the final?
Certainly mildly surprised, especially the way Real Madrid went up on the penalty in the first half. And yet, I do think a lot of people underestimated Juventus heading into this. You know, everyone was basically looking at this team as like the fourth weak sister. And this is a different Juventus team with some terrific players. Max Allegri, I think, has been very good tactically with them. They don't play like this stereotypical Italian team that's just worried about defense. You know, they can score. And just a tremendous story to see Alvaro Morata score the decisive goal against his ex-team, Real Madrid, in the Bernabeu, a team that had told him, "You're not good enough for us. We don't want you." So a lot of good storylines there. And yes, surprise. Only in the sense that, you know, Real Madrid was a team that has a ton of money behind it, obviously, and their stars, Cristiano Ronaldo, Gareth Bale, you know, they didn't perform in the second half when it mattered most.
Yeah, and Ben, touching on the Morata and the money thing, you talked about this in your piece on Planet Football for us, that Real Madrid spends all this money on their front line, yet it's their own academy player that they produce that comes back to haunt them. It's kind of a harsh way to go, yeah?
Definitely, and it's you know, it sums up the Hollywood way that President Florentino Perez wants to do things. He'd rather have the big names, the big guys, than the Cantera products, the products from the academy. Morata wanted to stay, but Real Madrid didn't want him. And in fact, one of the reasons I think Madrid struggled was because the front three looked tired. Bale has just come off an injury. Benzema's just come off an injury. Ronaldo never takes a break. And part of the philosophy of the president, which Ancelotti, the coach, has to abide by, or at least always abides by, is that when the three of them are fit, they play. And that means at the end of the season, when the games are very, very important and the margins are very fine, if they're not 100%, it shows. And I think they struggled last night. I think Ronaldo was not in any way decisive in the second half. Bale will get criticized for missing chances and chances, the type of chances that he was scoring a year earlier, which just shows what impact confidence has on a player. Because the headed chance that he missed late on was very, very similar to the headed chance he scored in the final against Atletico Madrid 12 months ago. And yet, he never really looked like scoring it because he's up against it mentally as well as physically at this stage of the season. And yet, Ancelotti did have options. He could have played Jesse more in the season. He could have played Chicharito more in the season, who has done very well in the last 4 weeks since he's been called upon a bit more. But these guys could have been rotated in more, and Morata had he stayed. So when it comes to the decisive part of the season, the Real Madrid looked tired. And I think Ronaldo does deserve some criticism for his second half performance, because if this is the guy that you know, wants to win the Ballon d'Or again, which is just a subplot, you know, a side issue really to the main thing. But he is the leader of the team. He is the face of the team. And he didn't play like that when they needed him to. He had a lot of space in the first half. He missed a couple of good chances. Bale set him free on a big crossfield ball. And he was one-on-one with the keeper. Well, it was pretty tricky, but he hit a left-footed shot into the side netting. There was another chance that Benzema created for him. He twisted his marker, but then made the wrong option. He crossed into the middle rather than trying a shot. And these are decisive moments. This is when Real Madrid are one up, and another goal would have made a huge difference at that stage of the game. And he didn't make that difference. And the difference between him and Messi, who made the difference in the big games. I mean, think back to our conversation a week ago, just after Messi had scored two astonishing goals against Bayern Munich to put them three up, is that Messi does it time and again on the big games, always on the big games. And Ronaldo, this time, was not able to deliver.
Yeah, and ultimately that was the difference. And that moment you were talking about when he didn't shoot, I mean, he was. It's not like there was that hard of an angle, you know? He was a little bit off to the left of the goal, but that's a ball that you would expect him to put in the back of the net, and instead he opted for the pass. Real Madrid obviously did not get that goal that they needed to kind of give them a little more breathing room, and then Juventus took it from them. And now you look at Barcelona matching up against Juventus in this final. Barcelona is going to be the overwhelming favorite. They're going to be the favorite no matter who they played. But given that it's not Real Madrid and that it's this perpetual underdog Juventus and four-time defending Serie A champion, it's tough to call them an underdog against anyone. But Barcelona, obviously, you look at Messi, Neymar, Suarez, the way that they're playing together. Grant, do you see Juventus putting up a fight? Is this going to a blowout? You do? Okay.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think it would be a mistake to continue underestimating Juventus heading into this. They'll have a lot of time to prepare. That said, Barcelona will be the favorite, deservedly, the way they're playing. You look at what they did in Munich in the return leg, and they did exactly what was needed. Gave up the early goal against Bayern, and you thought, oh, maybe Bayern might have a shot. This is the recipe that they need to get back in this, coming in down three goals. But very quickly, Barcelona quashed those hopes with just some tremendous play by their three-headed monster. Lionel Messi is in top form again, and Lionel Messi in top form is an amazing sight to behold, and it's just such a treasure to be able to see him play at that level again. Not that he's been playing poorly for the last year, but he's on a stretch right now. This is Messi at his best again, and it's good to see him do that under a coach, Luis Enrique, who is not Pep Guardiola. And the way that he's working Messi with Neymar, with Luis Suarez right now, they've figured things out. And I think that obviously is going to be the biggest challenge for Juventus, is how do you deal with that? Because the way Barcelona just took apart Bayern in the first half, they were on the way to embarrassing them. And Bayern, being a proud team, having a very good coach and very good players, saved some pride in the second half. But this Barcelona team right now, I'm a little bummed that Luis Enrique is not getting a little more credit, because it's interesting to see how certain managers get a ton of credit for their team's success whenever they play well. And then others like Luis Enrique, basically, I've seen characterizations of him almost just rolling out the balls. And I think he does deserve credit. This is his first season, and he's taken Barcelona to a final again for the first time since 2011. Has a chance to potentially do what Pep Guardiola did at Barcelona.
Yeah, and it's not just this final, it's the Copa del Rey final. They're on the verge of winning the league. I mean, he could win a treble in his first season as Barcelona manager, and you do that, you should be legendary status. And I think you're right. He is kind of both managers, really, in the final. Allegri as well. I mean, when he was appointed Antonio Conte's successor, I don't think there's really anyone who thought that he was the guy that was definitely going to put them over the top and take them to the Champions League final, yet here he is. And Ben, do you think that's kind of one of the major subplots of this final, is these underappreciated managers that have really gotten the job done under the spotlight?
Definitely. I mean, Allegri's in his first season. There was outrage when he was appointed, but it proved to be a masterstroke. Now, both these teams were on course for the treble as well, which is the first time that two Champions League finalists have competed for the treble against each other as well. in a kind of winner-takes-all situation since 2010, when Inter Milan were up against Bayern Munich, having won their domestic leagues and their cup competitions. And whoever won that one, it was actually Jose Mourinho's Inter, goes on to win the treble. So for both these guys, as you say, in their debut seasons at the club, to be on course for the treble is an astonishing achievement. And while I think quite a lot of people will be upset that the Clásico final that has never happened in European Cup history is avoided again, Real Madrid won't be there. Personally, I'm quite relieved about it. These teams play each other all the time. Real Madrid and Barcelona, we have it twice a year in the league. They play each other sometimes in the Spanish Cup. They've played each other in the Champions League semi-finals in recent years. The constant Ronaldo-Messi narrative will continue. And yet, you know, for the third year running, we've got an underdog in this final. 2 years ago, it was Dortmund. Last year, it was Atletico. And this year, okay, they're the four-time Italian champion and their, you know, their revenues are huge. But as Grant said at the beginning, you know, they were the fourth weakest sister of the group. They are still an underdog. And I think that's nice because, you know, the problem with European football at the moment is there is a bit too much familiarity. We see the same teams playing against each other. We had Real Madrid Schalke two seasons running. We had PSG Barcelona in the group stage and in the knockout. You know, sometimes it's a bit of overkill. So to have two sides that haven't played against each other is really, really nice. I don't think these sides have met since 2003. So that's one good thing for me. And also two different countries as well. This is a European Cup. You want as many different countries in Europe associated with the final. And in the last 2 years, again, we've had an all-German affair and an all-Spanish affair. So I think it's nice to share the love around Europe. One more subplot that I'm looking forward to in the final is Lionel Messi against Carlos Tevez. So while Messi Ronaldo is the obvious narrative for the best player in the world, there's a really interesting story, you know, developing or that has been developing for the last 5 years, really, in Argentina, where Tevez is universally popular because he's seen as a player of the people. The way he plays, the way he looks, he plays like a bull in a China shop trying to prove a point and rampaging around, and he plays with his heart on his sleeve. And Messi is much more controlled and more European, and that's partly because he's been in Europe since he was 13. And so there's this emotional connection that Tevez has in his homeland, but he hasn't played for his country for about 4 years. He's just been called up in the squad for the Copa America, but he's been out of the international side, partly due to disciplinary issues with the coach. But, you know, now he's back in the side for the summer. It could be interesting, but, you know, Messi v Tevez is one that I'll be watching.
Yeah, for sure. That's definitely, and they're both, you know, the form that they're both in also adds to that. There are so many other fascinating kind of player one-on-one, two-on-one, however you want to look at it, dynamics. Obviously, you know, Xavi, his role has been reduced with Barcelona, but the fact that Xavi and Pirlo are in the same final, I think, Grant, this is something you put out in the immediate aftermath of the game. Yesterday, we're talking the day after Juventus beat Real Madrid. I think that's awesome. Seeing Gianluigi Buffon go back to Berlin, where he won the World Cup in a penalty shootout with Italy, and now can go win a Champions League final, perhaps, in that same stadium, that's a fascinating subplot. And, of course, you know what is coming, Luis Suarez against Giorgio Chiellini and Patrice Evra. We are going to hear oh so much of this for the next 2+ weeks. Grant, what are some of the dynamics that really have your eye from the final?
As I shoot a staple gun into my head about the Luis Suarez, Evra, and Chiellini stuff, those guys just need to get out in front of that, make a statement, and try and be done with it, say they've addressed it, because we have a long run-up until June 6th. And, you know, it's an easy story to do. I am fascinated, as Ben said, by the Messi-Tevez angle, because on the Argentine national team, Messi does obviously have a lot of power, and there's certainly people who think that Messi influenced Tevez not being on the World Cup team. Messi's buddy-buddy with Sergio Aguero. Now, you know, they're extremely close. Tevez is not really in that group, and now we see Tevez getting back into the mix under a new national team manager. And so my guess is Messi and Tevez will say all the right things about their relationship heading into this game, but there's not a ton of love there, to be honest. And as Ben said, this very Argentine divide of who's more Argentine, and Tevez is the man of the people, El Pueblo, the much more like Diego Maradona, viewed as very Argentine, whereas a lot of Argentines still view Lionel Messi as very European, very Catalan, went to Barcelona at the age of 13, and hasn't won a World Cup like Maradona. So very interested to see the Argentine perspective on all of this. Other subplots, I think you look at these teams and I hope I think we get a good soccer game, and sometimes finals, Champions League finals, World Cup finals are not great games, but both of these teams are playing an open style right now and seem to want to go toe-to-toe. You think back to the first leg of the semis between Juve and Real Madrid, and the first half was just fantastic from an entertainment perspective. And I think we'll see that in this game. I don't envision Allegri deciding the only way I can win is to totally defend, because that's not the way that Juventus has played this season. So I'm really excited that we're going to see a good game.
I agree. And I there are so many different ways to dissect these teams. This final, to me, what it comes down to is the fact that Messi, Neymar, and Suarez are unstoppable right now. I don't think that there's a team. I don't think that there's a back line. I don't think there's anything really that can stop them the way that they're playing currently. Now, obviously, there's plenty of time between now and the final. An injury could happen. Fatigue could happen. You never know. But the way things are going right now, I have a hard time seeing anyone really putting a halt to the three of them. What they're doing right now is so – it's just special to watch. If you're a neutral, if you're a Real Madrid fan, you might want to look away for the next few weeks, because there's going to be a lot of Barcelona trophy lifting. Ben, do you see it differently? Do you think that this Juventus team is capable of kind of stopping that front line?
I think they're capable of doing a decent job. Yeah, the way Buffon is playing and – Allegri does have that defense pretty well drilled. I mean, for me, to add to Grant's storylines, there are a couple more that throw forward to next season as well. What does this mean for the future of Paul Pogba? Because, if Juventus win the Champions League, he could either leave on a high and say, well, I can't do any more. But by reaching this final, Juventus bagged themselves €100 million in prize money, given the other Italian side's poor showing in Europe this season. And that could be available just to bump up his contract and get him to stay for one more year. So while Pogba is one of the biggest names who's expected to be on the summer market, it might just help Juventus keep him by reaching and indeed winning this final. And then we've spoken about Luis Enrique as well. Now, this summer, Barcelona have their presidential elections, and you never know who is going to win and who the winner wants to be coached, because often the candidates put forward a coach on their ticket. You'd imagine the current incumbent is in a bit of trouble, Bartomeu, because he's up with Sandro Rosell in a fraud case over the Neymar signing. And so if Laporta, as has been reported, wants to come back, he may not want to be associated with Luis Enrique. He may not want Luis Enrique to be his man. And so Luis Enrique could be in the weird position of winning the treble in his first season at Barcelona and potentially not being the coach there next season. I mean, that's just so bizarre. So I'm just throwing it forward to see, next season will be as fascinating, or what happens in the summer will be so fascinated as well at both these clubs. And, that's something to keep an eye on.
Yeah, that I can't even imagine something as wild as that happening. But look, if it's in play, if it's a possibility, it's something to watch an out for. Now, before we change gears a little bit and go to the American game, the two teams that fell, Real Madrid and Bayern Munich, when the expectations are that high at clubs like that, there tend to be big swinging changes. At Real Madrid, you're hearing Ancelotti is going to be headed for the exits. Gareth Bale has obviously been subject to a lot of criticism. At Bayern Munich, Pep Guardiola's name has obviously been touted as the next Manchester City manager or headed to the exits. Grant, in terms of changes for these two clubs, what do you see happening? And I know you've done some reporting on this in recent weeks.
Yeah, I can tell you a little bit from just my reporting and then what I just kind of personally think might happen here. Just from my reporting, my understanding is that Ancelotti's been aware for a while that if he didn't win a trophy this year, meaning Champions League or La Liga, that he would not be returning as manager. I do think that is what will happen. I do know that Man City has contacted him, and that to me seems like a much more likely scenario than Pep Guardiola going to Man City. You know, it's a little bit of what have you done for me lately, and it's ridiculous, obviously. Ancelotti won Champions League just last year, but he also signed up for this and knew what he was signing on for when you agree to coach a team at a club that is run by Florentino Perez. So not all that surprising there, I guess. And then you look at Bayern, and my understanding from my reporting was that as long as Bayern didn't go out in a horribly embarrassing way in Champions League, that Pep Guardiola was going to be welcomed back next year. Pep Guardiola has no desire to leave Bayern Munich. He's very much a contract guy. He's said time and again that he has one more year on his deal. He'll be back at Bayern next year. The journalists who know him best, Guillaume Balaguer, Marty Perrinau, who've written great books inside Pep Guardiola's team, have reported that he'll be at Bayern Munich next year. So the question would be, does Bayern Munich still want Guardiola? And I think they do. You know, I think there might be some elements within that club because it's a very political situation inside that club who are disappointed, and may even a couple of those guys may want him gone. But I don't see Karl-Heinz Rummenigge, the chairman at Bayern, pushing Pep out the door. I expect him to be back next season.
And Ben, as for Bale at Real Madrid, it came under so much criticism, and obviously you could see the frustration in his face yesterday with some of the chances that he missed. Is he a dead man walking at Real Madrid? I mean, they spent all this money for him. You can't imagine they're going to be willing to take that much of a loss. And plus, he did win them Champions League. It's crazy how things change from year to year. But is Real Madrid going to be his team next year?
I think so. But you're right. It is crazy how quickly it can change. I feel sorry for him because he was so decisive last year, and we didn't talk about it as much as we should have done, or at least it didn't get the credit that it deserved, his achievements in that first season, just as I think his performances in the second half of this season have been over-exaggerated as well. I do feel that he lacks support from the group, and maybe he doesn't do himself any favours because I think he doesn't speak the language very well. He is very close to Luka Modric, but not any of the other players. And you kind of sense that as well, just watching the game when he made a mistake or overhit the ball. There was no one really coming over to him to pat him on the back or have a word with him. He really looked quite alone out there, even though he was the guy trying to make it all happen. And yet you just wonder how long Ronaldo can keep up his form, his fitness. He's now 30. Has he got 1 year playing 60 games a season and being this prolific, or has he got two more years? Because what you could see happening is next season, you know, Ronaldo and Bale share top billing, and the season later, when Ronaldo is 31 and a half, Bale is in prime position to take over. My feeling is that Bale will stay one more year and then be tempted by a return home. But that would be almost the wrong time, because that's the time when you're ready to take over from Ronaldo. So it's just a question of how patient he can be. But I certainly think it would be premature for him to leave and for the club to push him out. And I don't think they will push him out because he's very much Perez's guy. And so I think he'll stay.
Well, definitely fascinating element of all of this. A fascinating Champions League, really. I mean, I don't think from an entertainment standpoint you could really ask for anything more with the way things have played out this season and all the storylines. So something to look forward to over the next few weeks as we get ready for Barcelona-Juventus. We'll change gears a little bit to talk American soccer and going along the lines of Bale and Luka Modric, who played at Tottenham. Got Tottenham goalkeeper Brad Friedel announcing his retirement today. And to help us break down Brad Friedel's career a little bit, we're going to welcome in Brian Strauss. Brian, welcome.
Thanks. I'm a Caps fan, so I'm not in a good mood.
Tough day to be a Washington D.C. sports fan.
No, just the Capitals, just them. They're alone on Choke Mountain by themselves. Not bringing the other teams into this.
Well, they were the opposite of clutch, which clutch though is one way you could call Brad Friedel's career. Brad Friedel, one of the best goalkeepers in U.S. soccer history, amazing career. The longevity, the level that he played at, obviously helped the U.S. to the quarterfinals of the 2002 World Cup. Brian, just when you think of Brad Friedel and what he did on the field, I guess what do you think?
I think of 2002. I think of, and I think of him as part of an incredible tradition. I mean, for me, it's hard to sort of really pull Brad Friedel, you know, apart from what started with Tony Meola and went through Casey Keller and now Tim Howard. And perhaps on to Brad Guzan. I mean, it's he's part of a tradition that American soccer can be really proud of, and sort of one of the few ways so far that the game in this country has had an impact on the sport as it's played at the highest level. You know, we've produced phenomenal goalies, and Brad Friedel, incredible consistency, and then those penalty kick saves in 2002 that will live forever. And you know, it's time, obviously. He's 84 years old, and it's time for him to move on. You know, he'll be celebrated along with the other legends that the U.S. has produced in goal.
84, that's got to be a record for a Premier League goalkeeper, yeah? I mean, that's...
Yeah, I think he does hold the record for age of a Premier League goalkeeper. You're exactly right.
84, 43, it's all the same, right? I'll echo those sentiments, and also the accent. Oh, man, the accent that he developed while being in England is pretty legendary as well. Grant, I know you've gotten to know Brad pretty well, obviously, through reporting, and now he's been doing some work with Fox, and he's going to be doing more work with Fox TV. Just put a bow on his career.
Well, it's a remarkable career when you go back to him playing at UCLA, to being involved with the U.S. national team for so long. And he set records in the Premier League. 310 consecutive starts is a record. And played in 450 Premier League games, which, you know, those are marks of quality in a goalkeeper when you can stick around that much and in that long in that pressure cooker environment. And the crazy thing about it is his numbers would have been a lot higher if he hadn't had to deal with work permit problems for so long when Liverpool first wanted him. And he would have been in the stratosphere on number of games played if he had been allowed to actually go to the Premier League when the Premier League first wanted him. So for Brad to fight through that, to get there eventually and have such a successful career over there, it's just remarkable. And then the longevity. I went to do a Sports Illustrated magazine story on Brad Friedel just – I think it was three seasons ago when he was still the starting goalkeeper at Tottenham, a team that was not far from the top of the Premier League. And yoga was something that he credited for lengthening his career, allowing him to play much longer than anyone would have expected. So he's a really smart guy too, and I think people will see even more of that now that he's moving back to the U.S. and is going to be working for Fox Sports, doing a lot of broadcasts for them, a lot of insight. And I hope people get over the accent thing. Yes, it's kind of funny, but the content of what he says when he's calling a game or talking about a game, it's plain to see.
I remember having a conversation with him a few years ago, and he said something to the effect of that he worried about the fact that Americans didn't understand or recognize the commitment he still had to American soccer, that he'd been over in England for so long and he left the national team a bit early and the accent, you know, and that he, that was something he really cared about, was wanting to, you know, come back or have an impact on American soccer and continuing to grow the game here. And he wanted to be sort of recognized for that. So we'll see if that happens.
I think one thing also to look out for with Brad Friedel is he's had a lot of irons in the fire. Talented guy. He is about to get his UEFA Pro coaching license. He's been coaching in the Tottenham system there in addition to training. And he's going to be coaching as an assistant on the U20 U.S. World Cup team with Tab Ramos in New Zealand coming up. So he's not just about doing media. I could see him being a coach in MLS or potentially someday in Europe.
Very interesting. Obviously, you know, talented career that is just about to reach its next level. And it is crazy that he's 10 years removed from playing for the national team. And here he is still in the Premier League. Granted, you know, didn't really play at all this year. But the fact that, you know, the longevity and everything that he put into it and on the club level is phenomenal. He's you know, a trailblazer in a lot of ways, and also in a lot of ways, like Brian said, carrying on that tradition of the U.S. goalkeeper. Now he's not the only figure in American soccer to retire this week. Dwayne De Rosario, just one of the best players in MLS history, announced his retirement. To me, I thought it was a little bit of an odd way for him to go out. Obviously, he's a free agent. He wasn't on a team this year, so no real chance for him to get a swan song at all. But it was like an Instagram post on a Sunday night during the NYCFC Red Bulls game. It was, to me, you know, I think of a guy of that stature, and I would prefer to see his final, you know, moment before he goes off into the sunset be applauding the fans at his home stadium as he walks off. Nevertheless, one of the best players in MLS history, I believe sixth all-time in goals. He had longevity, won four MLS Cups. He won a Gold Cup. He won a U.S. Open Cup. He won Canadian championships. He basically won everything there is to win in this region, except a CONCACAF Champions League title. Brian, you got to see him play down when he was with DC United up front and close. Just what did you think about De Rosario and where he stands kind of in the pantheon of MLS players?
I always regretted missing. I have this kind of thing where I don't like to work on my birthday. I just, every year, I just try to take my birthday off. And so it's a warning now. But on my birthday, like in 2011, I think, was this game where DC had an early red card and they were playing Toronto. And De Rosario had a hat trick for 10-man DC United and tied his former team 3-3. I think he scored the third goal in like the 88th minute. He was spectacular, and I missed the game, and I've always regretted missing that game because I refused to work that day. But he was perhaps the most audacious, flamboyant, and spectacular player the league has ever seen. Incredibly clutch, incredibly creative. He would pull goals out of nothing. He could score from anywhere on the field. Bicycle kicks, volleys, dribbling through three guys. I mean, he simply had a level of confidence that I think has been unmatched in league history. I mean, for me, he's best 11 all time. As you said, he's not only put up the individual numbers, he's won trophies, and it's a phenomenal career. There's the interesting other side to it, though, where he's kind of been a, I don't know, he's hard to figure out. He can be evasive. He can be prickly. He's not always an endearing personality. I remember one MLS technical type saying to me something like, you know, what does it tell you when a player that talented has been traded that many times? You know, and it's something to think about that, you know, with great genius sometimes comes sort of, a tough personality. And so, but at the same time, he seems to have endeared himself to many teammates. He had a ton of messages of support. And the guy's a legend. I mean, he's one of the great players in MLS history, and he could have been at Milan. You know, he had that offer to join AC Milan as a teenager, and he turned it down, and we saw what resulted.
Yeah, and his MVP season, he played for three teams, right? He went from,
that's right,
from Toronto,
yeah,
to New York.
Stat of all, yep.
Yeah, he went from Toronto to New York to D.C., ended up tying for the league lead in goals with Chris Wondolowski that season. But he was a big part of D.C. United's resurgence and bringing that team back to you know, the level where it expects to be. Back when I was living in D.C. and I was more of a writer type, and I definitely thought that if I ever wrote a book, it was going to be titled Waiting for D-Row, because he was just epically late after every game to come out and talk to the media. We're talking like an extra 90 minutes. It's, you know, but look, you reach that star level and that that's just kind of what happens. For me, it's interesting because I felt like he always had a chip on his shoulder. Like MLS's salaries weren't as high in his heyday, obviously, as they are now, and that's using the MLS standard because we all know that MLS salaries don't really compare to anywhere around the world, but that's another discussion for another day. But you almost wonder if he was in his prime now with the more DP spots and everything, I think he would have gotten the more of the money recognition and maybe have less of that chip on his shoulder. I mean, there's that famous goal celebration he had in Toronto where he mimicked writing a check.
Signed me. Yep.
Yeah. And that is one of the images you talk about, the other side of Dero that stands out to me. Grant, we've talked about, you know, between ourselves, some of his greatest goals. There's that one free kick. If you haven't seen the highlight, definitely check it out. It kind of defies the laws of science, right? It bends fully around a wall. This is while he's playing with the San Jose Earthquakes, and finds the back of the net, beating Kevin Hartman, I believe. Is that the one for you that you take away from his career?
Yes, and fully knowing how Brian will respond to this and disagree with me, I am going to make my case that is my favorite Dero goal. And there's lots of great Dero goals over the years. But to me, that goal against the Galaxy, if you watch the replay in particular and you see how far outside the post that ball started and where it ended up, it's basically the equal to me of Roberto Carlos's famous free kick goal in, I think it was 97 in the Tournoi de France, which was an amazing goal as well. Just to see a ball basically defy the law of physics and to have that video angle so that we can see it and go, holy smokes, just a tremendous goal all around. And there's the cool thing about Dero is that there's a lot of goals you can choose from and have a very nice debate about what were his best goals. If I'm going to pick one word to define his career in MLS, it would be audacious. I thought he was always capable of doing something that just blew your mind on the field. And an interesting guy too, you know, vegetarian, Rastafarian, great goal celebrations. You know, it was whatever that funky chicken thing was he did was great. You know, you knew that you could expect that after one of these goals he scored. So that he did it for so long in MLS and did it with different teams makes it very impressive.
Brian, I'll let you counterpoint because I know you think that goal is great, but...
No, I was just going to say, I remember having a conversation with him one time about his training habits, and he talked about you know, eating strange Creole stews and running sand on the islands and, you know, things like that. He was a very he did things his own way, you know, and was incredibly fit as he aged, and so it worked for him. Yeah, no, I love a good free kick as much as the next guy, but yeah, I'll always believe that, you know, creativity and technique under duress is far more impressive than creativity and technique when you have all the time in the world to plan and think and nobody's trying to kick you. That's what separates the greats. And so for me, yeah, that free kick was nice, but Di Rosario also did that kind of thing with literally no time to plan and with guys trying to, like, take him out and, you know, to improvise and to demonstrate genius and skill and to do so while you're under duress or danger. That to me is always 1,000 times more impressive. I would never vote a free kick a goal of the year. It just doesn't have the same level of stress and demand and duress on the player who's scoring it. And Di Rosario, like I said, scored full volleys, bicycle kicks. He scored from half field. You go on YouTube and just look at these goals where he beat two or three defenders and turned the goalie inside out. These are things that he did in real time. These are things he did while being chased, while being kicked, while being pulled. That stuff to me is just remarkable. And yeah, he's an all time great. He's got two MLS Cup winning goals against LA and for San Jose and against New England for Houston. The guy was just remarkably clutch. And you know, I guess Maple Leaf Sports he's going to be ambassador now for Maple Leaf Sports, and they need some. They need some ambassadors. I mean, the TFC blew the Canadian Championship semifinals again last night. You know, more turmoil there. So maybe Dero can make some people smile.
I think that MLS is obviously in its 20th season. It's relatively young. I feel like Di Rosario is going to be one of those players that, you know, decades down the line when we're looking back at the early years of MLS, he's someone that that, you know, the diehards will all be like, oh man, you know, they'll be telling the stories of him and what he did, because I feel like he will kind of go a little underappreciated after, you know, the top level of DPs, the Donovan, the Beckham, the Keane. We'll see what Jared and Lampard bring. But he, you know, really was one of these guys that in the infancy of this league was a big ticket. You know, he was.
I agree. And Jaime Moreno is going to be there as well.
Yeah.
You're going to have, I mean, you could argue Di Rosario and Jaime Moreno are two of the five best players in MLS history. And they're both going to be exactly where you just said. They're going to be sort of underappreciated because their names aren't as big as the Keens and the Beckhams and the Henrys. That's exactly what's going to happen.
Yeah, so we'll see. But look, at the end of the day, congratulations to Brad Friedel, Dwayne Di Rosario, a couple of fantastic careers, guys who should be celebrated and definitely will. We'll see what MLS does at the All-Star Game this summer. I'm actually kind of curious to see. Obviously, Tottenham is going to be the opponent. Brad Friedel will not be under contract with Tottenham at that time, but I think it's a no-brainer for me to honor him in some way. During that game, and Dwayne Di Rosario as well, I believe scored against Manchester United in the All-Star game in Houston, right? Just good opportunity, something to keep an eye out for down the line. Well, those guys called it a career. We're going to call it a day with that. I want to thank Grant Wall, Ben Littleton, Brian Strauss. I am Avi Creditor. Thanks for listening to the Planet Football Podcast again, and we'll talk to you next time.
Do you know about the Locked On Podcast Network? The number one daily sports podcast network. Locked On has a daily podcast on every NBA and NFL team, plus a growing lineup of college and MLB teams. You get a daily bite-sized podcast giving you the latest on your team from the local experts. Lakers fans, search Locked On Lakers. Cowboys fans, search Locked On Cowboys. Just search Locked On, your favorite team, on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.